Hello again, dear followers. We hope you're ready for another great episode. Football-related nutrition is increasingly becoming a hot topic due to its relevance to achieve the best possible performance on the pitch. Alongside that, more and more footballers are searching for new and relevant information about what kind of supplementation they should be taking. So, to help you provide you some new insights about this subject, nutritionist Gabriel Martins from Portugal kindly accepted our invitation. Currently working in Spain with cyclists and author of the fantastic Feel the Pedal podcast, in which he interviewed various people from the world of nutrition, Gabriel gave us his opinion about the potential rationale behind the use of fad diets, general needs in terms of macro and micronutrients for the injured athlete, and if there is a role for supplementation like collagen, vitamin C, creatine, among others, especially for muscle and tendon healing. So, people, I invite you to stay for dinner and listen to this one. Gabriel, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for your availability, to talk with us a little about this subject. So, first question. Recently, more and more fashion and fad diets, for example, gluten and or lactose-free, low-carb, plant-based, have been massively diffused throughout social media and documentaries. And we know our athletes, but also us as performance health professionals, can be a bit influenced by those, right? So, can you outline us if there is any rationale behind those? Can they really help to influence the internal milieu or inflammatory responses and recovery / adaptation after training?
Yeah, so it's a great question to start with. We nutritionists tend to see this in a much different way. While people normally they demonize or put diets in a pedestal, we see these as possible tools to use. We see an application for all these diets for sure, like tools in the toolbox. And I use the tool that it's most appropriate in the context. So if I have a patient or an athlete who's gluten intolerant, I'll have to design a gluten-free diet. If I have an athlete who's lactose intolerant, I'll have to minimize lactose as well, and depending on the level of intolerance, of course, and probably even thinking ahead and realize what other micronutrients might be affected by removing these nutrients, these foods, and trying to promote the ingestion of other foods or supplements that can make up to these losses. Mm-hmm. Low-carb diets, for example, obviously they have a place in exercise performance. Periodizing carbohydrate intake, we have much research now available to apply this and fueling for the work required, for example, when considering endurance events, but also in team sports as football. And if an athlete is plant-based, it is our job to create a vegan plan, taking into consideration, the possible deficits such as iron, low muscle carnosine that was not referred on the Game Changers documentary for that matter, low muscle creatine content, B12 status. And the idea here is not to demonize each diet, because even the ketogenic diet has a possible role in sports nutrition.
Okay. So there is an increasing demand and search for intervention strategies in football medicine that could help us in positively influence the healing mechanisms and connective tissue quality post-injury. What are your recommendations in terms of macro and micronutrients needs of our footballers when recovering from injury? So we can enhance their anabolic response as well as healing of different tissues like tendons and cartilage.
Yeah, so this is an emerging and important area in which nutrition can have its impact. So whatever sports we are talking about, whether it's cycling or football, injuries are, of course, an inevitable outcome that we must consider and be prepared for it in some way. And although your question goes straight into the recovery process of an injury, I believe it may be also important to clarify for the listeners that there may also be an important component of nutrition in preventing injuries as well. From a nutrition perspective for the recovery or healing process, I would consider four main components in which we should act on. And this would be prevention of lean body mass loss during immobilization periods, matching energy requirements during the injury period, promoting a muscle repair, and also preventing low energy availability. And I will start with preventing lean body mass loss. And this is done by providing adequate amounts of high quality protein, of course, which is, I would say, it's especially important in the first 2 weeks of immobilization. And I think we have enough evidence nowadays to suggest amounts between 2 grams to 2.3 or even more grams per kilo per day. Ideally high in leucine, which would be the main trigger for protein synthesis. And these include, but are not limited to, lean meats, fish, dairy products, eggs. This, of course, is valid for omnivore athletes. And these include, although omnivore athletes, this should be the main sources. They could include also plant-based sources as well. As for vegan athletes, they should really aim to include beans, lentils, you know, peas, chickpeas, tofu. And I think this would be the most concentrated sources of protein. And then nuts and seeds as well, but these ones used with more caution because we are aiming to match energy requirements and most nuts and seeds are calorie dense. So in both omnivore, I would say, and vegan athletes, supplementation here with protein powders will really add up a convenience factor here. Much noticeably, I would say, on vegan athletes who might be probably at a higher risk of not ingesting enough leucine. And on both dietary pattern choices, I would say that aiming for an evenly distribution throughout the day would be ideal as well, rather than just, you know, concentrating protein ingestion at lunch or dinner, which is the pattern that we see mostly on all athletes. Going to the second point, it should be the matching of energy requirements. There are guidelines, and these guidelines are based on kilocalories per kilo per lean body mass per day. So it's important here not to go below or even close to 30 kilocalories per kilo per lean body mass per day, because this can compromise, has been shown to compromise not only muscle repair, but also a bone formation. So for this, I think proper equations taking into account the physical activity level of the injured athlete in the case that it doesn't require total immobilization need to be used to properly estimate energy requirements. By a trained nutritionist, of course. And in this context of matching energy, I think we could also talk about carbohydrate periodization again, because while we all know that carbohydrate intakes, they need to be high to sustain high intensity phases of training and competitions, in light training or rest days, carbohydrate intake should be reduced. So it seems appropriate that during inactivity or immobilization, carbohydrate intake may need to be reduced as well. As for muscle repairing perspective, in which we could also consider bone formation in the case of a fracture, I think protein will still play a role here. So the previously mentioned recommendation would still apply. Limb immobilization, we know that it reduces resting muscle protein synthesis as well. I think we should really aim to consistently provide the protein we need. And still, I think other micronutrients here would also play a role. And we could list here a myriad of key nutrients for bone health. But really, the main nutrients that we know that we have control on and appear to condition more the development of stress fractures are unquestionably calcium and vitamin D. And in any of these, aiming for example, 1,000 milligrams of calcium would be the recommendation here. As for vitamin D, this is, of course, dependent of accessing it first. So we should first access our serum vitamin D3. I would think that the proper parameter, which would be 25-hydroxy D3. And if it's inferior to 75 millimoles per liter, then I think, depending on the level of deficiency, we should aim for 2,000 to 4,000 international units of vitamin D3. So I think this would be advisable, but it's something that has to be seen individually, of course.
Yeah. About collagen synthesis, supplementation like collagen, gelatin, vitamin C, what do you think of those? Since these practices are increasingly becoming widespread in European clubs, and even footballers are asking and seeking that kind of information near their medical staff.
There is no doubt that collagen is the most abundant abundant protein in the body, and its regeneration and resynthesis is definitely something that athletes may pay attention to. And having said that, a word of warning here before getting any deeper into this. I do struggle with the claimed benefits of collagen in tissue repair, to be honest, for many reasons. First of all, collagen is a throwaway protein that comes from hydrolysis from bones, feathers, and are left over from animal processing, especially skin. Okay, this is used for making gelatin that we know. The collagen peptides that are usually sold as sports nutrition products are usually very, very water soluble, but the protein itself is deficient in tryptophan. So, which is an essential amino acid, and this makes the quality score of collagen being zero, meaning that it's not a complete protein. And from a muscle regeneration standpoint, which is what we're talking about here, it's also very low in leucine, which is the key amino acid for muscle protein synthesis that we've mentioned before. And it's therefore involved in the recovery and regeneration processes as well. The main hypothesis is that collagen supplements, now answering your question, contain amino acids needed to repair collagen itself. When we're talking about collagen, we refer to muscle collagen, tissue collagen. We refer to all types of collagen. And then they make the assumption that the amino acids themselves are in some sort of rate-limiting quantity, and that if you didn't drink collagen peptides, that you don't have enough sufficient amino acids to prompt collagen repair to make those connective tissue proteins again, which, as far as from I know from the literature, it hasn't been shown in a convincing way. So, we are assuming that we ingest collagen from a biochemistry perspective and digestion. We ingest collagen. In the digestive tract, we break it down into amino acids. We absorb these amino acids, and then somehow we incorporate them into our own collagen matrix. Okay, fine, I can buy that. But I just don't know yet if ingesting other type of protein powder wouldn't provide the same benefits. And I'd really like to see more research comparing collagen with for example, a matched amount of whey protein. It hasn't been done yet. So I'm not saying that collagen wouldn't work for this matter. I'm just not sure if all the supplements, whey protein or casein protein supplements, wouldn't do the exact same effect.
Let's just wait a few years then.
Yes.
Okay. So, Gabriel, to wrap up this podcast, taking in consideration the ever-increasing demands of congested schedules, footballers need to better recover from both training bouts and games. Can you highlight the footballer's general needs in terms of macros? Well, as long as you don't repeat, if you can add something that to what you already said. Can you highlight the footballer's general needs in terms of macros, as well as the potential role for some ergogenic aids that have been reported to be beneficial, such as beetroot juice, creatine, just to name a few?
Yeah, so in this matter of nutrition for the traveling athlete, research is really scarce, and there are not specific recommendations for this particular moment. And so when considering traveling and all these tight schedules that football players have, we must really stick to the common sense. Football players, when traveling, should really look after their hygiene practices, first of all, because they are at risk of exposure to new pathogens and perhaps an increased in scenarios of contact with many people in confined areas, in dining halls, in shared accommodation, transport, even indoor competition venues. And we must really educate the player to prioritize hygiene. So for supplementation for this specific moment, there isn't much research on the area. And I would say that in periods of more stress, in the less time to recovery and busy traveling schedules, vitamin C might play a much more important role in the days previous to competitions, in these questions of maximizing immunity, for example. I would say that cherry tart juice supplements are also quite promising in this area, especially to improve rates of muscle function recovery after damage, as well as reducing muscle soreness and inflammation. First of all, rather than just thinking immediately in supplementing is having a constant ingestion of polyphenols in the diets. And this can be done with berries. This would be the main foods packed with the highest amount of polyphenols, other fruits in general, vegetables, dark chocolate and nuts, but caution with these two because they are calorie dense as well. And you've mentioned creatine. Yes, I don't see why not. In fact, if the player has been loading creatine before, he needs to maintain it until the match day. So no changes here. And creatine has an essential, vital role in supporting recovery and healing processes during immobilization as well. So it's a supplement to take into account definitely. Fish oil supplements are, I know they are really, really popular as well. And I see a lot of colleagues and players putting a lot of faith in them. But I would say that the amount needed to see detectable increases in muscle omega-3 content, I would say they are really high. We're talking about 5 grams per day, taking at least during 2 weeks. So, which is, of course, impractical to achieve with diet alone, with fish alone. So this needs to be taken into account because the dose required may become quite expensive to supplement with. And we really should measure here the cost benefit individually. And you've mentioned beetroot juice.
Yeah,
So it's popular, I know. And the idea behind it is quite appealing. So looking at the evidence, there seems that the more trained the athlete is, the less effective beetroot supplementation appears to be. So in fact, what we actually see is that people with a low VO2 max of around 50, for example, are the ones who could benefit more. And we still don't know exactly what has happened, but it may be that the case of increased vasodilation and increased blood flow is already an existent training adaptation in trained athletes.
Okay, Gabriel, thank you so much for your time, okay? And we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be on.
And there you have it. Thanks again to Gabriel for his availability and for giving us an urgent and very sustainable vision about this thematic. And to our listeners, we thank you for being with us once again. As you already know, your feedback is very important for us. So, feel free to comment and rate our podcast on our iTunes page, Mixcloud, and our website footballmedicine.net. See you all very soon.